Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Seriously, these brands are absolutely fantastic, and I really recommend you support them. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in-store. And learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. Hey, y'all, and welcome to Trials to Triumphs. I'm Ashley Blaine Featherston Jenkins, but you can call me ABFJ. This week, wellness entrepreneur and angel investor Hannah Fallis-Bronfman talks to me about harnessing our potential and dreaming without limits. Hannah is the definition of a multi-hyphenate. She's been a sculptor, a DJ, an entrepreneur, and an investor, just to name a few. Each new chapter of Hannah's career is a clear reminder that we were never meant to stay in boxes.
Both my parents really instilled the idea that there weren't that many limitations around what I could do or what I could dream. There's no limit to your potential. It's almost like you can't really even put expectations on yourself because that almost limits you as well. And I think both of my parents really put that deep, deep, deep inside me.
Hannah, welcome to the pod.
I'm so excited.
Okay, so here's the deal. We have not met in person, but I feel like we have because I have been following you for so long. And one of my favorite things about you truly is how open you are and honest, but truly genuine. And so I feel like those of us who have been following you for a really long time have been along for your journey with, you know, relationship, children, career, all of the things. And it's been really exciting to see you grow and blossom and all of the beautiful things that have happened in your life. And it's also been really refreshing to see that they didn't all come easy. And you have not been shy about sharing that. And so I just want you to know I am a huge fan, a big supporter of yours, and I'm really excited to get to know you better and share you with our listeners.
Oh my God, Ashley, first of all, I'm blushing. Thank you. That is such a sweet intro. And I really, really appreciate it. It's been, you know, I have to say, like, I didn't know I would be sharing my life on the internet when I first started sharing my life on the internet.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you being along for my journey because it has definitely taken pivots. It's definitely gone down some interesting roads and routes. And again, like when I started out, I didn't know my roadmap. I didn't have a strategic plan. And I think that's also what has led me to be able to be vulnerable.
Okay. So before we get into it, I want to start with some icebreaker questions. Are you down?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Totally. So Hannah, everybody knows this on the pod. I'm obsessed with like food and like drinks that people like, but you cook a lot and you share that with us. But I want to know, what's one of your favorite things to eat? Like when you're, if you were to close your eyes and be like, okay, this is just one of the things that just makes me so happy whenever I eat it. What is it?
Dim sum.
Yes.
Literally. Like someone asked me the other day, which I thought was like a really fun like question for dinner like chat. If you had a time machine, or not really a time machine, if you had like a teleportation machine,
okay,
where would you go for your best day of food? And you could like you could be somewhere else for breakfast than you are for lunch than you are for dinner.
Ooh.
Right? Like your ideal breakfast could be waking up in the south of France with a fresh baguette and like, you know, homemade salted butter with jam, whatever, right?
Yeah,
then
that's a great question.
I am taken over to Hong Kong, baby, and we are having the dim sum feast for lunch because I can be KO'd after that. But we will be revived for dinner when I'm going to, you know, I haven't figured out my dinner location yet. So
oh, okay.
I am kind of feeling like the Argentinian, like, meat, like, vibe, outdoor, like, barbecue, friend. Yes. I've apparently taken all my friends through this teleportation thing as well, because all of my friends are there, and we're having, like, a party on the beach.
I
love
that.
But dim sum's my number one.
Dim sum is delicious. Now, I've never had it in Hong Kong, though, so now I'm like...
Oh, well, you know, there is an amazing place in LA that has, it's called Din Tai Fung.
Din Tai Fung. Yeah, we said it the same
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah, it's
I've
great.
Been to the one in Hong Kong, and I have also been to the one in LA. It's amazing.
I love that. Like, I couldn't even finish the question. You were like, I already know. You were like,
I know. I'm with you. It's a soup dumpling. It's a soup dumpling, and it's my favorite.
Love a soup dumpling.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Okay, Hannah, so let's start at the beginning. What did New York give you?
Oh my gosh, New York has given me everything. If there's like one thing I could feel like I'm in debt to, it's New York. You know, I feel like New York, growing up in the city, like my, you know, my mom always tells me, like, I grew up in the Schomburg Center, at the Studio Museum, you know, at MoMA. Like, New York has given me so much culture that, you know, I think New York gives you this sense of culture, this sense of belonging, this sense of street smarts. You know, you got to have your wits about you in New York. You know, my mom would always like to say, like, you know, you're in New York City. You can't leave your common sense at home. That's like what she would say. You cannot leave your common sense at home. You need to, you know, if I wanted to go on the subway by myself, like, there were several things I had to do in order to be able to do that. You know, that is a big step. But ultimately, you know, I've been like, I ride the subway like 7 times a day, you know, that's how I commute. And there are some people who are like, oh, I would never go underground. And it's like, okay, like there are, you know, I think there is levels to New Yorkers, like we get it. But New York has just exposed me to every different type of person I think that there is in the world, and has helped me feel so much compassion towards humanity, feel real resilience, what it really means to go through something and come back from it. You know, I was in New York during 9/11. I'll never forget where I was. I was in sixth grade, and you know, I had several friends whose parents passed away, and it was the craziest day of our lives. And it ended up being the craziest months, you know, therefore after. I had friends who lived downtown whose houses and homes were destroyed. You know, so I think New York has really, is really a part of my DNA and has helped shape who I am from so many different kind of angles, and I can't even speak to all of them. It's so inherently who I am as a person. And I feel so lucky for that, because I can't say that listen, no shade to LA, but if you ask someone who's a born and raised LA person what LA gave them, I don't think it's half as what New York gives to people.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I've been in LA for almost 14 years. So I'm like, I mean, at this point, soon it'll be like, I've been here longer than I've been in the DC area.
Anywhere,
you know
right?
what I mean?
Yeah.
But there is something for me, and everybody knows this, because whenever I go to New York, I'm like on my Instagram and I'm just talking about how alive it makes me feel. There's something about New York City that I've traveled all over the world. It's something about New York that I feel like the best version of myself. I feel free. I also just love, honestly, walking down the street and seeing so many different types of people. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's one of my favorite parts about New York is in LA, I could go a week, honestly, and like, maybe see
not
two
see
other
anyone?
Black people in the way.
I know.
No, yeah. I could not see anybody, or I could see like two other people that look like me.
Yeah.
In New York, it's impossible to go an hour and not see somebody that looks like you. You know what I
100%.
Mean? And that is very
inspiring.
It's like, inspiring.
Reassuring.
And I feel seen. I feel seen. I feel represented. I feel like that's important, I think.
100%.
Talk to me about growing up biracial in New York. Did you always feel seen? Did you always feel understood?
Never felt really seen. You know, for me, growing up biracial had more to do with the communities that I was around and less about me being biracial. Like, I think if I had grown up in an environment with predominantly mixed or Black people, I would have totally felt seen. But I grew up in a predominantly white environment. So it was hard for me to feel seen. My mom did a really great job of creating spaces for me that she thought would help me feel seen. Now, in reality, being biracial and being in predominantly Black spaces actually was a little bit harder than I think my mom realized or had intended it to be. Because I think for my mom, when my mom grew up in the South Side of Chicago in the 50s, and back then, she always talks about how, like, the idea of colorism, she almost was like shocked by it herself, like, kind of, and seeing
they weren't doing the separation thing in the way that we do it now.
Yeah. And so, you know, I grew up dancing for Al Vanilli, and you know, I had people who would say, you know, kind of nasty things to me. And then on the vice versa, like going to school in a predominantly white environment, my personality as a child was very kind of like leader forward and kind of like, you know, I know the way, follow me type of vibe, which I think my school had a little bit of a hard time dealing with. Mm. And so my school kind of always was putting me in kind of like, not like a troublemaker vibe, but my parents, my white father, and my white Jewish father and my Black mother very much felt that they were exclusively picking me out from the rest of the school, which my parents really did not appreciate. And at the same time, that never really like ended up dimming my light. Like it just, I don't know.
Oh, thank God.
My parents were very much like, this isn't your problem. This is their problem. If the teacher can't get a hold of their students because their students want to follow you, that's not a you problem. That's a their problem.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So like, I'm good. I'm not in trouble, or like, you know what I mean? Like, but it definitely felt like it was really hard to figure out a place to belong. It wasn't really until like after college that I really like made a lot of like friends who were Black or also biracial. And that's like weird. You know, I think I know that there's a group of people who totally feel me and have experienced the same thing as me. And I know that there's also not, and that's like totally fine. But I think the most kind of difficult thing about being biracial is that you don't fit into people's standard boxes, and society is always trying to put you in a box. And if you don't fit into that box, it gets complicated and people start to say things about why you don't fit into the box, or about your, start assuming things about your identity. I have this conversation a lot with other biracial people. You know, we're pretty much the first generation of biracial kids, right? Like when my parents got married, they weren't allowed to get married. They eloped against the like what their parents wanted. And they had to go to New Orleans to get married. So, you know, I'm a first generation mixed kid in my family, but also I find that across the board, that's, you know, my age and my, you know, that's kind of where we're at. And so as a first generation mixed kid, it's like, we're constantly on the defense. You know, we are constantly defending ourselves, defending our identity, our like right to be more than one thing, you know? And I think that that, you know, that's a nuanced thing for a lot of people. And then I like talk to European Black people who are like, well, why don't you just say you're mixed? And I'm like, because I live in America and we just say we're Black because that's what it is here, which is fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's all good, but like, it only becomes like this weird thing when people expect you to explain yourself.
Yes.
And I don't know why I constantly have to explain myself.
I think what when I talk to my mixed or biracial friends, what you've all have had to do is you have to tell people what it is unapologetically.
Yeah.
And you, there comes a point in your life where you've been put in enough boxes where you have to say, hey, I'm not in boxes. This is who I am. Either you bang with it or you don't. And also, I don't have to explain myself.
Yeah.
I'm Hannah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm Hannah. And I'm diverse within who I am. And that's beautiful. And I think for you, another thing that I love about you is that you, I feel through you how connected you are to your, you know, Black culture and your Jewish culture. And ultimately, Hannah, you should be. You know why? Because it's who you are. You don't have to choose. You know what I mean? It's, you're both.
Totally.
Yeah.
Honestly,
and that's beautiful.
Like, thank you even for saying that, because it's like, it feels sometimes like I said, like you're constantly on the defense, and it's like, that's like a, that's a hard place. That's a hard place to operate from. It doesn't feel good. And it's like, you know, when people are constantly trying to figure it out, like, oh, well, I'm confused. Like, wait, you're a Bronx man? I thought, like, who, you know, whose daughter are you? Or, oh, wait, you look the way you look. Who's your mother? You know, like, you know, I mean,
I can't imagine. I honestly can't imagine people questioning if somebody is my mother or my father. But I just want to like acknowledge you and like, that's wild, Hannah. That's tough. You know what I mean? Like that's a tough thing to experience. It is.
Totally. It's definitely, listen, it's, I always like to say that my, like my mom always used to say, like, my identity is my superpower. And Like, she was like, that's why you will be in so many different rooms that, you know, I was never in or that your father was never in, because you are a woman, you are Black, you are Jewish, you were exposed to, you know, you're privileged, you were exposed to, you know, all sorts of different types of culture, business, education. Like, you know, that makes for a pretty unstoppable situation. Yeah. So just own it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
And guess what? She was right. Look at you now, girl. I love her. Actually, I want to get into her. First of all, obsessed with your mom, obsessed, her fashions, her beauty, her love of her family. I just, I'm obsessed. So I want to know, what's something that, some wisdom maybe your mom has imparted upon you in your life that has always stuck with you and that you know that you'll pass down to your daughter too?
I mean, she is such a wealth of knowledge. It's crazy. And she always like has these like wild stories to tell. But I think if we're really talking about like something that she really instilled in me, is we just, there's like, you always have to be the bigger person. You always have to take the high road. And she said, that's one of the harder things to do in life. She said, it's so easy to react. It's way harder to not react or react in a way that is more unexpected for how we look like. You know, my mom was very conscious of never looking like an angry Black woman. And she has really instilled that in me, that, you know, it's the way I talk to people. It's the way I respond to people. It's how I act in moments of infuriation that will potentially define, be a defining character. And that's what I plan on passing down to my kids.
That's good. What about your dad? What's something that your dad has given you that you are just so, 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 so grateful for? Something he's instilled in you?
You know, I have to say my dad has always just instilled this idea that, like, I don't need to make any excuses about who I am. I don't need to act like, you know, I'm not meant to be someplace. You know, I think my dad has always, you know, he brought me into the mix, into the fold, like as like him as a business person when I was really, really young. Like I would go to his office all the time. I think he really wanted his environment to see that, you know, he had a Black daughter and that, like, you know, he was always like taking me with him, like whether it was a business trip, like, or like in his office or to a meeting. Like I was very well behaved as a kid. So I like, he could take me to a meeting and I would sit in a corner and draw for an hour and like, that would be fine. And so he's always brought me into rooms that I otherwise would not have ever had like exposure to. And I think he's always made me feel like I deserve a seat at the table.
And that's good.
That has been like so formative for me as a businesswoman. And, you know, even now as I kind of embark on this, another kind of, transition in my life in terms of my professional career, you know, it's something I haven't done before. And I remember I said to my dad, he goes, well, what scares you most about this next thing? I said, well, you know, I've never done it. And he goes, but Hannah, everything you've done, you had never done before.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess that's true. He was like, so what, like, what makes this different? Right. Like, so he's always been really good about encouraging me to be like my authentic self, know that I deserve to be in the rooms that I'm in. I have a seat at the table, and to just own that.
As you were saying this, I just was like, that's so good. Because I think, you know, especially when you live a life of entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. You're constantly having to create space for yourself and wanting to get into spaces that can continue to elevate your business, your businesses, yourself, whatever. And so to have known from a young age that you deserve a seat at the table, you know, things that might seem too big, you're like, no, I can do this. I deserve to be there. I think that that can ultimately propel you in a way that is really, really powerful. And I'm just really grateful that you had that from a young age.
Honestly, me too. Like, it's just like, it's like he basically, both my parents really instilled the idea that there weren't that many limitations around what I could do or what I could dream. You know, my mom left Chicago when she was 18 to pursue, she actually wanted to be in the Alvin Ailey Dance Company. And she had a pen pal. She was going to come to New York. She was going to audition for the company. And when she got to New York and she auditioned, she didn't make the company. And she told us she was so sad, crying hysterically. She was like, there's no way I'm getting back on a Greyhound bus and going back to Chicago and letting my family know, who already, you know, her family already said, girl, you're not going to make it in New York. She was like, I am not going to prove them right. She was like, I am going to figure this out. 2 weeks later, she auditioned to be in the first all-Black cast of Hello Dolly with Cab Calloway and Pearl Bailey, and she got the second lead.
Yes, she did.
Come on, Miss Sherry. All of a sudden, she's a Broadway star all of a sudden with, you know, some of the most iconic Black actors of our lifetime. And so I think, again, like making, like understanding that there is no limit to your, the word I want to use is potential. There's no limit to your potential, right? And it's almost like you can't really even put expectations on yourself because that almost limits you as well. And I think both of my parents really, really put that deep, deep, deep inside me.
That's such a good story.
Like, oh my God, that's, her whole that's life. I'm like, write the book, write the
Where's
book.
Where's the like, book? Yes. I know. We need that. It's coming. She'll do it.
It if is, anybody's, for sure.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Mm-hmm. You know, I was introduced to Hannah the DJ and I was like, this girl is so cool. She's just like DJing around the world. Like what? Like all your like pictures in the booth. I was like, this is so cool. And I now know you as Hannah, the 17 billion other things. What I want to know is, when did you truly give yourself the permission to expand and be all of the things that you really knew that you could be?
That is such a great question. You know, when I started DJing when I was at art school. So okay. I was a sculpture major. So I was a fine art major. I was DJing for fun at my like little college. And, you know, it was something that I was able to like pull off when I got back to the city. Somehow I knocked on everyone's door. I had begged people to hire me in the clubs. And I DJed clubs for, I don't know, 2.5 years while I finished school. And even for a year after I finished school, I was still DJing nightclubs. And when I realized that I, like, someone had asked me to DJ like a Dolce & Gabbana sponsored art party, much more elevated and chic than, like, you know, my grungy nightclub that I was doing, right? So I was like, oh, like, this is, like, chic. They want to put me in a dress. Like, I mean, I wasn't getting paid, but I was like, oh, this looks like this is cool. Like, this is, like, where the cool people are. You know what I mean? Like, and I somehow just, like, started making that transition slowly to, like, corporate DJ life. And when I made that transition, that's also when I wanted to start my first company, Beautified, which, you know, now we're at, like, 2013. And when I started wanting to scratch this entrepreneurial itch that I was having, and I started just, like, make moves to do it, that's when I really realized that I had a multifaceted thing going on. Like, yeah, I was going to be a DJ, and that was going to be my way of, like, getting my income until I, like, got this startup off the ground. But then I'm also going to be, like, a beauty entrepreneur, and I also DJ. Like, I started realizing, like, pretty quickly, like, I can do a lot of things. It's not a traditional path. No one showed me this path, but this is where, like, you know, we had just experienced a crazy economic crash. And my traditional background in PR and marketing at, like, big companies, like, people weren't hiring for that. So I needed to get creative. And, you know, at the time, I was trying to, like, do all this stuff to create money so I could actually be an artist. And then that
a sculpture
kind of,
artist?
Like,
sculpture?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that kind of, like, ended up not happening at all because, you know, life and the hustle, and I started to, like, want different things. And and it's funny, like, now my husband's always like, we're going to build you a studio out east and you're going to get back into your art one day eventually, you know? And I'm like, I would so love to do that. But now it just feels like it almost, like, felt like, in a way, like, I didn't have the balls to, like, really be an artist. And because it's hard. It is hard to be an artist.
I can't imagine. It's inconceivable to me.
It's really hard. And I feel like I didn't have the balls. And maybe I also was, I didn't have the patience to be an artist because I, you know, and I think that that is a reflection of the true consumer that I am. You know, I want satisfaction and I want it now. And with DJing, I really got that, right? I could feel it. I could be it. I could, you know, it was just like being in that moment of curating music for people to dance to and have a great vibe and, you know, be like, damn girl, you're killing it, whatever. Like, it was such a, that was more fulfilling to me in that moment than me making something alone in my studio and hoping that I'd be able to show it to people eventually one day.
And
that's kind of also what led me to, like, Beautified and then just, like, yeah. So I think in that moment of me kind of, like, DJing and then starting my first business on the side was, like, the first moment that really showed me, like, I can be whatever the hell I want to be and do whatever I want to do.
I want to pivot a little bit to motherhood and wife life. First of all, obsessed with you and Brendan, just obsessed. I love it when you're like, Brendan dressed me today. And I'm like, this is, cause that's so my husband. Daryl is like, he's the fashion guy. Like, he's so into it.
It's his
favorite thing to do. Yeah. So I very much so relate to, like,
get it.
Oh my God. Yeah. Daryl's the guy. He's the Brendan of the house. Yes. For sure. But I just want to, now I'm going to get emotional. Thank you publicly, Hannah, for sharing your IVF journey because Daryl and I pivoted to IVF and, you know, we are in the midst of our IVF journey, but what was most stark to me was I didn't see anybody who looked like me. Mm. And it felt so alienating. I would be on TikTok all day, Instagram, looking, the doctor would tell me I have to do this. And so I would look up a video of somebody doing it. And mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody that looked like me. I didn't see anybody who was sharing it in a way that like you did. And I just have to thank you, Hannah. I don't even know if I can put into words how much it gave me, you sharing all your complete journey in it. Because the thing about when you're embarking on something new is that you don't know what you're going to encounter. I didn't know what I was doing. You didn't know what you were doing, but you shared it. And, eventually I'm going to share my story publicly too. And you really were the person that inspired me to do that because I realized, oh my God, Hannah really was how I got through this. I would go to a doctor's appointment and be like, what did Hannah do? What happened to Hannah? What happened with this? What happened with that? And so to know that I always had you to look to in a journey that's so personal and so, I think what I've learned about IVF is that it's the journey that ultimately, hopefully will change your life in a way that nothing else can. And so because of that, there's a lot on it. There's a lot on wanting to bring children into the world in a way that is non-traditional. And so I could go on and on and on, Hannah, but I know you didn't know how much that did for me. And so I wanted to let you know that like, I wouldn't have gotten through it. I wouldn't still be able to get through it if it weren't for you. So thank you.
Oh my God. Well, Ashley, I mean, honestly, I know how isolating it can be. I feel you 1000%. And I think, I have a kind of always been a person who I hate feeling guilty. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to feel any guilt in my life about my decisions or anything. And I was really broken before starting IVF. I mean, I did all the tricks before IVF, right? With all the IUIs, all the Clomid, all the things, and mm-hmm. nothing was working. I had had a miscarriage already. And I was like, you know what? I was feeling so just down on myself. Like, I didn't know if this was a me issue. I didn't know if it was, because it wasn't a Brendan issue, but then they weren't finding an issue with me. And it just, there weren't
unexplained answers. Infertility.
And the guilt that I was feeling and the anxiety. And you know what? I was like, I just have to let it out. Because I'm the type of person, if I'm upset or I need to cry, I can't talk because my throat closes. We always joke, like, Hannah shoots it straight because I just don't know how to shoot it any other way, right? And honestly, when it comes to my anger and my sadness, it's the same way. I cannot deal with it being pent up inside. I just have to get it out. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Over the last decade of sharing my life on the internet, that felt like the only thing I knew how to do was just to document. And that felt so comforting to me at the time.
Ditto.
And I didn't know when I was going to share it or how I was going to share it, but I just figured if I can document it, I'll figure that out. And if I can find the light at the end of this tunnel, then I can really turn this into something that I think will really help a lot of other people. And, mm-hmm. and I didn't know if I was going to have a light at the end of the tunnel. And as we know, so many IVF warriors don't find their light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I think that's also something that I'm hyper aware of when sharing my experience. I am a lucky one. I got my babies, but that doesn't happen for everyone. And I have dear friends that it doesn't happen to. And I also have friends who will never experience the amount of turbulence that it took to have a baby. And their sublime ignorance also can feel so alienating.
Yes.
I have been on all sides of it. I'll never forget. I had a girlfriend when I was like really, before I had gone through IVF, but we had been trying. She called me to tell me she was pregnant. She was like 7 weeks pregnant. And I was so stunned on the phone. I hung up the phone on her and I pretended that I lost, that the phone, like the phone
call dropped.
The call dropped. I literally, and it took me like an hour and a half to like get my wits about me to even get back on the phone, congratulate her and be happy for her. Because I think that that's something that's so hard for people to understand. Like I was truly happy for her, but I was also so devastated and jealous and sad.
Yeah. It's...
And when you're hopped up on hormones, like it's a different thing. Your brain is working on different cylinders than you're used to. And you are not necessarily acting or feeling like yourself.
Yeah.
And that's like a really hard, it's really hard.
Yeah. But it's hard. Honestly, Hannah, seeing you share your story and seeing the support of your husband and seeing the support that I have from my husband, and seeing your light at the end of the tunnel, honestly, it's how I'm putting one foot in front of the other, Hannah. So I just want to say thank you. And again, you inspired me to do the same. So I'm going to pass it on, you know what I mean? And I'm going to do the same thing because we need it. Like we're sitting here crying because you,
I know,
we know.
And you just need to keep visualizing the beautiful outcome that I know is in store for you.
Yes.
You just got to keep visualizing it. And by the way, I had so many kind of, curveballs during IVF, right? Things that like, that might feel like a setback, but actually they aren't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you can't let, like, I think that that is something. Like the worry and the stress can really take over your body. And it's the most annoying part, I think, about the whole thing is people tell you not to stress. And you're someone tells
impossible.
Me not to stress one more time. I'm gonna literally kill someone.
Yeah.
But, you know, your body does hold on to this stress. And the stress is the opposite environment that you want to cultivate in the body in order to receive your baby.
Yes.
And so it takes a lot of mental strength to really, you know, be annoyed, be stressed, and then honor it and then let it go.
Yep. 1,000%.
Right? And that's really hard. So you have to have this defense force field that when people start saying things, your force field says, nope, not today.
Mm-hmm.
And that just flicks right off. Right.
Yeah.
But that's hard. You got to master that. That is something that you really need to think about when you're showering. When I was going through everything, when I would shower, I would think about the water coming down over me and being this protective force field, because every day felt like a battle.
Oh gosh, that is the perfect way to describe it. Yeah. We can talk more about it, but I definitely want, it's something that I know just isn't available to a lot of Black women, to a lot of women of color, due to finances or just due to awareness. We don't know what our options are. And so it's something that I really want to be active in the fight.
Yes.
Or misdiagnosed, but I want to be active in the support of women of color, especially Black women, knowing that this is an option available to them and supporting them in that option.
100%.
What has been your takeaway from our conversation today?
I mean, one, that I'm obsessed with you.
Ditto.
And honestly, like just how important it is to have these safe space conversations with friends. I feel like sometimes I really can be moving a mile a minute and I don't give myself enough time to decompress. And this was a really beautiful conversation that allowed us to go in a lot of different directions and allowed me to like feel a lot of different things. Feels that I kind of bury most of the time. I really appreciate you giving me the space and the you know, the graciousness of just being vulnerable and willing to, yeah, talk about it all.
Thank you, Hannah. My takeaway is to always remember to trust my instincts. And what I mean by that is that I was right about you. Like, I knew that we would click. I knew that, like, the source of inspiration that I felt from you online would be all the more prevalent in our conversation, and that this would, you know, turn into a budding friendship. And I am just really grateful for that knowing. I had these knowings about people. I had these knowings about orbits that I should be a part of, and that I want people who I want in my orbit. And I'm just so grateful to know someone like you. And I'm so grateful to share you with my listeners, because you're what this is all about. This whole conversation was all about trials to triumphs.
Thank you so much. You're gonna make me cry again. I don't like, I literally just got chills. Like, what?
I mean it. So I'm so excited for what's next, Hannah. And you have so many people that are rooting for you and believe in you and just think you're wonderful. So just don't forget that. Yeah.
God, Ashley, you are really a gem. I'm so glad that we got to do this. Thank you
me
so much
too.
For giving. Yeah, this is amazing.
I can't wait to, what I can't wait for is when I'm in New York and we're going to get dim sum. And
oh, can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait. We'll be drinking all wait. The sake. Like, it's yes, going to be great.
I'm very excited.
Or maybe you won't be drinking, but either way, it's
we'll
going to be good.
See. We will we'll see, my friend.
And I'm sprinkling all that fairy dust all over you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. We did it.
Okay. We yay. Did it.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is produced by LWC Studios for OWN. The show's executive producer is Juleka Lantigua. Our managing producer is Fatima Elswifi. Shanice Tyndall is our lead producer. Jordan Thompson is our marketing coordinator. This episode was mixed by Trin Lightburn. Michelle Baker is our video editor. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, and we hope you did, please make sure to subscribe, leave a rating, and review wherever you listen to your podcast to ensure you hear the next one.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar cards, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.